The Bank. Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Thursday, Cinco de Mayo of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll have our second installment in our Follow the Waste series, this time looking at what happens to produce that doesn't meet the cosmetic standards of local grocery stores. This time on The Cannabis Report, marijuana correspondent Leland Rucker discusses the reasons for diminishing pot sales in Colorado and digs into some DEA clarity on the legality of marijuana seeds. And John Lindorf will be in the studio to catch us up on local food news. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the BBC News headlines. Then, John Lindorf will bring in special guests for another hour-long, supersized edition of Radio Nibbles. They'll be talking about food, fermentation, and flavor, and taking your calls. At 9:30, Dennis Ryder will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Jimmy Searfoss.
State Attorney General Phil Weiser announced Wednesday that Coloradans deceived by TurboTax campaigns will receive funds from a multi-state settlement. TurboTax is an parent company, Intuit Incorporated, will pay over $2.5 million in misleading low-income residents and military community members into buying its online tax products. TurboTax is an online tax filing service. TurboTax Free File is a free service provided in partnership with the federal government for low-income earners. An investigation found the company designed its website and associated search tools to deliberately lead clients away from the free online service to into its for-sale version. The company will pay over 80,000 payments in Colorado alone. Impacted residents will receive about $30 each year that they were deceived into buying TurboTax's so-called free edition during the 2016 to 2018 tax years. Colorado's 10th Circuit Court overturned a ruling requiring Denver to give 7 days' notice to homeless sweeps. KGNU's Luis Licon has more.
Denver law enforcement no longer have to wait 7 days before sweeping homeless encampments. A 3-judge Court of Appeal panel voted in favor of overturning a previous ban on encampment sweeps this week. The appeal court based the decision on a case last year saying that the court should have never issued the 7-day waiting period in the first place. The judge said that the plaintiffs, Denver Homeless Out Loud, who brought the case, had already been barred from bringing the particular constitutional claim in the past settlement with the city. This does not mean that the city can sweep without warning. Due to a previous settlement with the Denver Homeless Out Loud, the city must still give a notice in advance, according to Andy McNulty, one of the group's attorneys. Anna Cornelius, the executive director for social change and advocacy at the Denver Homeless Out Loud, says she hopes that the city will continue to follow the practices stated in the previous injunction, even though they are not legally required to do so. For KGNU, this is Luis Licon.
Vail's Town Council voted Tuesday to condemn land earmarked for resort employee housing. Vail Resorts had planned to spend $17 million to develop affordable housing on the 23-acre parcel, but the council approved a resolution that gives the town of Vail the ability to seize ownership of the land to protect a bighorn herd that winters in the area. According to the Colorado Sun, local business owners and residents sent some 80 emails to the council urging them not to condemn the land. Some 20 emails supported the condemnation. Vail Resorts has a shortage of workers because of a lack of affordable housing. Children's Hospital Colorado announced a partnership with Guild, an online education platform to provide tuition-free education to eligible employees. Children's will be the first pediatric hospital to offer these benefits. Employees can be funded around $5,000 per year for everything from English language learning to graduate degrees. Colorado approved a first-of-its-kind bill this week that would place regulations on sperm bank donors and fertility clinics. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The state Senate approved a bill Wednesday that would require fertility donors to agree to have their identity revealed to their biological children when they turn 18. The bill would also limit egg and sperm donors to contributing to no more than 25 families. Donors would need to be at least 21 under the new bill and would have to give families access to updated medical records. Fertility advocates say the bill is the first of its kind in the U.S. Supporters of the bill say it would give everyone the basic right to know their own identity and deter reproduction industry fraud, such as cases of doctors using their own sperm instead of donors. Opponents say the bill would violate privacy protections and discourage donations. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
A bill to ban the sale of flavored tobacco products passed the State House Wednesday. Under the bill, flavored products like vapes, e-cigarettes, menthol cigarettes, and chewing tobacco would be banned starting in 2024. The bill exempts hookah products, premium cigars, and pipe tobacco. Supporters say the bill protects young people from becoming addicted to tobacco and nicotine. Representatives who voted against the proposed legislation say the exclusion of some tobacco products contradicts the mission to protect young people's health. After 4 days of very welcome rain, the sun is back. The change in weather comes just in time for CU Boulder's spring commencement ceremony and Cinco de Mayo celebrations throughout Colorado. In Boulder, mostly sunny with a high near 69 and a low around 46. Wind gusts are up to 16 miles per hour. Highs in Denver near 69 with lows in the evening around 47. Winds could gust as high as 22 miles per hour. And in Fort Collins, a high near 70 and a low around 42. Wind gusts up there get up to 28. Outside of the Boulder studio, it's 40 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Jimmy Searfoss.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Food waste in the United States produces as much pollution as 37 million cars per year. That's according to a report by the National Resources Defense Council, which also found that redirecting just one-third of the country's total food waste would be more than enough to provide food security for communities in need. Boulder Food Rescue is a local organization working to reduce food waste through strategic and energy-conscious redistribution efforts. KGNU's Ellie Stuckrass has the latest report in our Zero Waste, Follow the Waste series. This reporting series was made possible by a grant from Boulder County's Zero Waste Funding Program.
Hey, I'm here with Boulder Food Rescue.
Awesome.
Boulder Food Rescue volunteer Katie Tyler walks into Lolita's Market, one of the many local businesses that works with Boulder Food Rescue to help reduce food waste. Boulder Food Rescue's partner grocery stores set aside edible food with bruises or other cosmetic defects to redistribute to local residents in need. Boulder Food Rescue volunteers pick up the food and then sort through it to discard whatever may be spoiled or unsafe to eat. They then drop the food off at a conveniently located community hub. Tyler performs a shift for Boulder Food Rescue every Friday, almost always by bike.
I think Boulder Food Rescue, on a whole, their goal that they are meeting is like 90% of shifts are done on bikes.
Tyler says bikes are her preferred mode of transportation anyway, but a dedication to limit emissions is also part of the organization's ethics.
Honestly, biking is a little more enjoyable sometimes, especially if it's really nice out, but definitely to, you know, limit like any carbon impacts of doing the shift. We are, you know, reducing food waste, but to just have that little extra mile of, you know, limiting or avoiding carbon emissions.
To see how it's done, I jumped on my own bike and tried to keep up with Tyler as she pulled a wagon behind her, soon to be full of food. Our first stop was Natural Grocers, where they gave us a box of produce to sort through.
So we sort through all the donations to make sure we're giving all edible food to the recipient.
Tyler says that erring on the side of caution actually avoids waste in the long run because sometimes clients will toss entire boxes of food over a few bad apples.
Sort of a rule of thumb is like only keeping stuff you would serve to your kids. Or thinking, like, if something looks like it's on the edge, we still would want this stuff to be edible in, like, 2 days' time. So if it's, like, you have to eat it today, we probably want to err on the side of just composting that.
After a second stop, Tyler's trailer is loaded with food, and we head over to the nearest distribution site. One local recipient of these food drop-offs is Liliana Galloso, who lives in an income-restricted apartment complex.
Todo está
pandemia y a través realmente de toda esta situación que no solamente pasamos en el mundo realmente.
Liliana says that she started receiving groceries from Boulder Food Rescue during the pandemic, and it's made her and her family value food all that much more. She says she feels blessed to have this type of assistance in her community and wants to acknowledge the volunteers who bring the food with care and in good conditions to her community.
Yo pienso que ellos lo hacen con mucho cariño y quieren que las comidas lleguen realmente en buena condición, ¿no?
All of the drop-off sites are selected by grocery program coordinators, who are members of the community on the receiving end of the food. Boulder Food Rescue Executive Director Hayden Dansky says involving community members in the distribution plan helps eliminate logistical difficulties for accessing food.
You know, we'll take food directly to a community, and that cuts down on barriers like transportation or open hours of operation, right? But when we say, like, what times work best for you? How do you want to run this? You know, they can set it up in a way where people don't have to go through those additional hoops of like filling out paperwork or standing in line or whatever those things are. And so that helps people access food in like both a dignified way and in a way that's easier for them.
Although Dansky and the entire Boulder Food Rescue team are extremely proud and passionate about what they do, they dream of a day where their efforts to prevent food waste and insecurity are no longer needed.
How do we actually reuse some of this excess, right? And recycle it and repurpose it? How do we have source reduction where we like stop overproducing in certain areas and start putting like resources and energy into places where we actually need that food? So it's a giant redistribution issue.
After dropping off all of the food recovered during her shift, Tyler returns the Boulder Food Rescue bike and trailer to its starting point. She then answers a survey about her shift so that Boulder Food Rescue can keep track of how much food is going through the system. Tyler said she averages 50 to 60 pounds of rescued food a week. According to their annual report, Boulder Food Rescue diverted nearly 500,000 pounds of food in 2021 and reached around 6,000 people. Boulder Food Rescue is also helping other cities and communities develop similar programs in their area through the Food Rescue Alliance, a nationwide collaborative effort. Dansky says it's these seemingly small, volunteer-powered efforts that can make a big cumulative dent in both hunger and the waste stream.
There's so much happening in this community, in the margins, in the depths, in the cracks, right? And like, it's so vibrant and it's so beautiful.
For KGNU, I'm Ellie Stuckrath in Boulder.
And now it's time for the Cannabis Report here on KGNU Community Radio. I'm Hanley Myers, and as always, I'm joined by longtime cannabis correspondent Leland Rucker. Leland, thank you so much for being here.
Good to be here.
So this time we're going to talk about yet another notable dip in cannabis sales and a little bit about seeds. What you got for us?
Yeah, you know, I saw this headline on a recent story in Westward Magazine. It said, sales on 420 not enough to lift marijuana industry struggles. And the story goes on. It says, Colorado marijuana sales registered a bump on April 20, the 420 cannabis holiday, but the annual boost wasn't enough to pull overall sales out of their recent slump. And we've talked about this before, you know, and as the story says, after a nine-month decline in sales revenue, Colorado pot shops looked to April 20 as a day when they could bring in more customers through product sales and promotions. Their efforts were successful, attracting more foot traffic and leading to a sales increase compared to previous weeks, but the numbers still reflect Colorado's weakening grip on commercial marijuana, which I find interesting. It also says the Colorado dispensaries using different dispensary menu services and sales trackers, they saw a 20% decrease in earnings on 420 this year compared to last year, and almost 40% less than in 2020. And the thing that really gets me here is when we talk about marijuana industry struggles in a news story, that really caught my attention, because I kind of prefer to think that there are other reasons, or there might be other reasons for this so-called decline in sales. And, you know, I think after 8 years of recreational sales of cannabis, probably marijuana is starting to reach most of its audience. Maybe not out on the western slope or anything like that, where there's less stores, where there are fewer stores, but these we've always seen dramatic growth numbers over the last 8 years, and you know, just maybe we're just coming to the end of that. I think part of it is that American thing that if a business isn't growing, it's in trouble. But, you know, marijuana is not going to reach everyone in the world. It's not going to be 100% of people are not going to use marijuana. I know that from using it for many years. The Statistica.com says that in Colorado, about 27% of people use cannabis in some form or another. And that's below the District of Columbia, Vermont, Oregon, and Washington State, but it's ahead of all the others. And that, so that says that about almost 3 out of 10 Coloradans use cannabis. That's not really that surprising, given the recent polls and stuff on people, when they ask people whether recreational marijuana should be available. But I can't imagine 5 out of 10 using it. That's really difficult for me. And I think that when we look at it, there's a lot of other possibilities for the decline in sales. In 2012, remember, Colorado was the first state to where voters were asked for adult use pot. And at that point, no other border state had legal marijuana. Now Oklahoma, which borders Colorado to the south and east, has legal medical cannabis with fewer regulations. New Mexico, right next to it on the state's southern border, is now selling recreational cannabis. Utah has medical marijuana, and none of those were doing it when Colorado went legal in 2012. I think also there could be just a saturated market for cannabis. Not all dispensaries will probably make it. There's a lot of dispensaries out there, especially in the urban areas. Part of it could be taxes and prices, too. It's really competitive out there at this point.
Yeah, you know, I'd imagine dispensaries and the cannabis industry would love to see those high rates of sales continue. As long as those sales aren't going to the black market, I can imagine that everyone's kind of at least pleased that the system's working the way it's supposed to.
That's a good point. I think that more people need to recognize that.
And you were going to tell us a little bit about seeds as well, and some clarity that we've gained about those seeds of old that we used to find in cannabis. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think there was a Commander Cody song about that, down to seeds and stems again. That used to be what you bought, basically, was seeds and stems, and then a little bit of product there mixed in. And I, like everybody else, we all had our little containers full of seeds back in the days before legalization. And the DEA has confirmed in the last couple of years, we're finally getting around to it, that seeds and other parts of the cannabis plant with less than 0.3% THC, that's the federal limit that, and we can go into that, but it separates hemp and marijuana. And if it's below 0.3% THC, that means it has legal. And since hemp and marijuana are the same plant with different THC amounts in their blooming flowers, but neither hemp seeds nor marijuana seeds exceed the 0.3% THC limit, so there's virtually no legal difference in them at that early stage. Had you been caught, the government says, had you been caught before the Farm Bill a couple of years back, however, you would have been prosecuted. But as it is, some places do sell seeds, other places don't, and you should probably do your research on that before you purchase seeds. But at least they're all legal at this point.
Well, you can stay in the know on what's happening in the world of cannabis here on the Cannabis Report, the first and third Thursdays of every month. Leland, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
For KGNU, I'm Hanley Myers.
Time now for Radio Nibbles, and John Lindorf is here in the studio with me to talk about a very different summer of 2022, with canceled food festivals coming back to life. Good morning, John. Do tell.
Good morning, Shannon. Good morning, everybody, in the around the big KGNU breakfast table here. You know, the last couple of years have been, there's been a lot of things, you know, that we could talk about. But in any case, you know, it used to be on any given weekend in the summer, there were all these cool food events in Boulder County, across the state, and it was more a case of choosing which one to go to, the celebrations of agriculture, all of that stuff. And then it went dark. People called it the fallow years. But this summer, things are coming back. Today's Nibbles column, as well as the cuisine page that goes with it in the Boulder Weekly, I did all this research to find all of the food events that are coming back this summer, and you can find them in there today. I wanted to tell you about some of them, just to give you an idea of all the stuff that's going on starting this week. For one thing, May 6th, and also the 7th and the 14th, the Boulder Valley School District has a wonderful organic plant and seed sale. It's a great place to get starts and that kind of stuff, and it's a good place to support. There's also a oyster mushroom workshop on May 7th at Benevolence Orchard, which is a very cool local farm. If you're really excited about actual gluten-free food and not food that doesn't have gluten that's made in a gluten kitchen, there's an event that's pretty cool. It's May 7th. It's at Holidaily Brewing Company in Golden, which is a gluten-free brewery. But they're bringing in five or six bakeries and other food producers that are purely gluten-free. And I just found out about this. Our friends at Ozo are having a latte brewing competition on May 12th in Longmont, you know, with prizes, you know, best shot pulled, best latte art. I think it's going to make great pictures.
And you can remind us about it next week as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And coming up, some other things worth noting. May 14th, there's the Art of Food Fest. It's a free gathering in Longmont. They close down a street, and there's going to be food booths and farmers and all that stuff. And if you're in a more sophisticated mood, this is a first-ever event. The Yaya Sisters High Tea is May 15th at the Yaya Orchard in Longmont. Some other things coming up in May. The Boulder Creek Festival is coming back with a lot of food. The Taste of Louisville is coming back on June 4th. And then on June 18th and 19th, I don't know if you know about Three Leaf Farm in Lafayette. They supply places like Chautauqua Leaf and the Duchambe Tea House. But they're having Botanica, which is a festival of plants, with a lot of really cool things like, you know, poisons in the garden, how to infuse herbs and things like that. So that's going to be a very cool. There's also a bunch of classes you can look into, including Longmont has this place called Art of Cheese. It's a school where you can learn how to make cheese, but there's a neat thing where you go and you meet the goats, you milk the goats, and then you make chev out of the milk. It's just very cool. Looking farther ahead, I wanted to tell you about this thing I just literally learned about this morning, May 21st. And I'm telling you about these things ahead of time, and you should look at the list, because this pent-up demand.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to go to these things. Don't be disappointed, you know, because you can't get tickets to farm dinners and these events. Anyway, this is called the Kingdom Five Kingdoms Dinner. It's at the Left Hand Grange in Niwot on May 21st, slow food. And they're going to be, it's a gathering of mushroom growers, including Justin Killing from Mycocosm, who's, it's my way of leading into a public affair this morning. In a few minutes, don't go anywhere, because we're going to have a special hour with Colin.
Yes.
With your questions, talking about mushrooms and mushroom growing, about tempeh, about cooking with it. It's going to be very cool. And that'll be just coming up in a few minutes.
Yeah. So, you know, don't go anywhere. Keep your dial locked. stand by your phone because we'll be taking calls as well.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I'll just have to ask you, what was the best thing you ate this week?
I was lucky to be taken out to lunch at Gemini, which is the new Spanish cuisine restaurant on the downtown mall, and had some wonderful homemade crackers, a wonderful brie-like cow cheese from Longmont, Colorado-cured meats and croquettes, and it was very, very, very tasty.
Well, you can read all of John's suggestions and his nibbles column this week at theboulderweekly.com.
And we'll see you in a few minutes on A Public Affair.
All right. Don't go anywhere.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Benita Lee, Steve Miller, Luis Licon, Jimmy Sirfas, Alexis Kenyon, Ellie Stuckrath, Hannah Lee Myers, Leland Rucker, and John Lindorf for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for a supersized Radio Nibbles call-in show that's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC.